the third eye. Secrets of numbers, secrets of song, secrets of numbers, secrets of song, secrets of wisdom.
Radio network to over 70 community stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome family and friends, fans and fiends, to today's edition of Word for Word. I want to thank you for tuning in today. I'm Benjamin Norris, and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at the powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week, we will chat with those in and around the community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. Today's guest is one of them. This man calls Melbourne home. You may have known him from your daily fix of confidential gossip when he was working for the News Limited papers. And with 17 years under his belt at the Herald Sun, you would be forgiven for knowing him as the King of Entertainment News. He has sat down with most of Australia's household names and watched the sun rise and fall on many celebrities, from social pages, reality TV stars, soapy actors, and the latest breed of social media influencers. He is a journalist who knows which stories fold and which ones fly, and is invited to every red carpet right around Australia. I'd like to welcome you and welcome Luke Dennehy to Word for Word.
I grew up with mum and dad. Very suburban, working class sort of upbringing. I never had that desire to be in a relationship.
And after a decade of interviews and gossip chasing, Luke Dennehy from the Herald Sun is ready to dish all the dirt.
So you get paid to just hang out with celebrities and go to openings.
Is it true that the old school celebrities are classier than the new ones?
I think so.
I still love that feeling of getting a great story in print, you know? I must say, and talking as a journalist, like everyone says, oh, they're gay footballers and stuff. I actually haven't heard that many very, very strong rumours, and I don't know if there is. It's funny, I think, especially in entertainment and the arts, if you're a homophobic singer or an actor or an artist, I think you would agree, like, you're going to go nowhere. Like, you have to accept the gays.
Affairs with nannies or bitter on-set feuds. We love a bit of celebrity gossip here.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it has been an incredible time of change. Even 5 years ago, you know, the industry just kept changing year after year. It's all about making both print survive and digital to keep going. Newspapers were, like, selling 800,000 copies a day. Like, it was extraordinary. We didn't really have online news at all. I think it was that love of news and that curiosity, and I loved it from a very, very young age, and I knew I wanted to be in it from then, and then it just sort of, I think when you know that, like, it becomes easier. Thank you, Benjamin. It's a delight to be at Joy FM. I've always wanted to be on this station, so thanks for having me.
Are you kidding me that you've never been in here for an interview?
I haven't been in here. I did go to the South Melbourne studios, I think, a couple of times from memory. I can't remember. It would have been really early on, but I have followed Joy FM for a long time. I actually reported on it when they went for the licence.
Yeah, right.
So it's great to be here.
You know what's interesting about you is that I used to have you as a barometer, that if I got invited to a party and you were there, I knew it was a good party. Was it strange to get invited to so many of Melbourne's parties over the last, like, nearly 20 years?
Yeah, look, it was, and I think it's always a privilege to be invited to those things.
Totally.
But after a while, you sort of get over it, I guess, and that probably sounds a bit ungrateful, but I think after nearly 20 years of doing it, you know, I was in my 20s, I always wanted to be a journalist, I always wanted to be an entertainment journalist, so to go to those things, it was a lot of fun, and I had a great time. Best one I ever went to was when Pink came to Melbourne. Red Bull were launching their Grand Prix team. I think that was in like 2003, 2004. They would have spent $1 million for a party at the Docklands, which is probably now a building, and Pink came down in this big Formula One car with Mark Webber and stuff, and that was probably my favourite ever party.
What makes a good party?
I think there's a good mix of the right kind of crowd, friendly people, maybe nice champagne that's being a bit greedy, I'm not sure if that's the right word, and just something to celebrate, I think.
Do you still get stopped all the time with people coming up to you and asking you for gossip? They're like, come on, Luke, what can you tell us?
You do get that a bit, but it's like, I think it's like any job, you forget things that might be newsworthy to people out in the everyday world, but for you it's just what happens every day. But yeah, of course you do.
Well, we're going to go back a little bit and look at your upbringing. And so you're from Victoria. You're originally from Hillsville, I think.
That's right. Hillsville, yes.
And you went to school out there.
Hillsville High, yes. Yes.
What were you like as a kid growing up?
I was always, I think, very curious. When I was a little boy, like, I had lots of girlfriends, like I think a lot of us have.
I remember that.
You remember those days?
Yeah, yeah.
I used to play Barbies instead of
was
trucks.
Kicking the footy?
I played tennis. Who would have thought? I grew up with mum and dad, very suburban, working class sort of upbringing. I have an older brother who's only 1 year older than me, like about 14 months, and we shared a room. And a younger sister who's about 4 or 5 years younger than me. So we had a really great life in Hillsville. It's all my whole family's there. My grandparents from one side of the family, aunties and uncles. Yeah, so it was a great place to grow up.
It's such a beautiful part of Victoria.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I'm really proud of Hillsville and the Yarra Valley, how it's evolved. When I left probably 96 from Hillsville High, I moved out. Like, I just wanted to get out of the place. You know what you're like when you're sort of 18. But now looking back at it, it's really improved, and it's so cosmopolitan now, and it's really only about an hour away from Melbourne. So it's a great little spot.
I feel like I'm going to talk to you in about 40 years' time and you're going to be completely retired.
Probably there.
Living in Hillsville, having a champagne.
Probably will, sitting on the balcony, enjoying it, because it is beautiful. And it's funny how you become more connected to your hometown. I don't know about you. But
I feel the same way.
Yeah, as you get older.
It's almost what you tried to get away from is what you end up connecting
to. That's it. Driving up the Yarra Valley, your listeners will probably know, it's so beautiful, like between Coldstream and Hillsville. And I just love that sort of drive.
And what was your relationship like with your parents growing up?
Yeah, really good. My mum, who's no longer here, she passed away probably in 2011. She had a long battle with cancer. So she was an amazing woman. Incredibly strong, very typical of the dynamic, I think, of a real typical Australian relationship. My dad was a real worker, like a labourer, but I think my mum was the one that really was the strong one, I reckon, in the family, like without being outwardly like that. Very, very strong woman, very compassionate, and she was amazing. And my dad, yeah, look, we have our differences sometimes, but he's fantastic, but he's just very, very different to me.
Yeah, right.
They were fantastic, always very, very supportive.
I think it's interesting, you know, over the course of talking to people on this program, especially gay men, I think we do have a kinship with our mums.
We do. You're exactly right. And I don't know about your mum, whenever I was on television or anything big happened in my career, every week actually, I used to do the morning show, like a little spot, every week, and she would ring me, you know, without fail. So
give you the debrief on
How you went. Yeah. I don't know if your mum did that, like, you know, I'm not sure about your haircut that day, but it was always very, very positive. And I think you're really right. I definitely had that with my mother. Like, I think even looking back growing up, they're just very, maybe they sense, I don't know, like I was never out until my parents till I was about 20, 21. But I think even when I was 9 or 10, I always had a very strong connection with my mother, because I think they probably know and they want to nurture you a bit. And my mum was definitely very much like that.
Did you have that conversation with her at any particular point as to what age she knew?
I'll talk about how I came out. So I moved to Melbourne, and, you know, I probably, the boys at high school used to say, oh, you're gay, you're, you know, all those.
Yeah.
And I used to say, so what if I was? Like, I was always very confident, like, but I didn't think I was. I didn't know, basically, because I was in Hillsville. At that stage, this was in the 90s, there was one guy that came out, and he was actually very well received, but I didn't think about it. Like, I didn't think about anything, really. Like, I kissed girls and stuff at the discos, but I think I was probably always gay. So it wasn't until I moved out and then found Melbourne, and the rest is history.
It's funny though, like, I think, you know, I can think back to school, and I mean, I was a late bloomer, so I didn't really go through puberty until I was closer to 17.
Right.
So it was less about not knowing my sexuality and more that it hadn't really, I hadn't really come into my own. I didn't feel like I was attracted to boys or girls, but because you're right, you know, we go to the discos, the blue light discos, or whatever they were, and it just was the thing to do, was to make out with the girls.
And I think looking back, that was probably what happened to me as well. I mean, the boys used to say it, and I caught up with a friend the other day. She said, you know, you copped it a little bit. And I wouldn't say I was bullied to the extreme, or, you know, it didn't really affect me. Like, I used to be very politically minded. I knew what I thought about things. I knew that it was okay to be gay if I was, but I think I'm with you. Like, I think it just was a matter of, like, I wasn't that explored or experienced when it came to sexuality.
It's one of those things where people knew my sexuality before I did. And you know what was really funny about that was people guessing my sexuality before I was comfortable and ready to talk about it. almost pushed me back a little bit. You know, I almost felt like wanting to prove them wrong. And then when I was aware of my sexuality, I probably didn't come out as quickly as I could have because I didn't want to be known as maybe lying about it or saying that I wasn't when I was.
Yeah.
It was just that I was late with it.
Yes.
And I was taking my time.
And I often think now, would have I come out earlier? And I think I probably would have because it's so much more accepted, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think back in the day when we were growing up, Dawson's Creek was on and there was a gay character.
Yeah.
Before then, it was like Melrose Place. I think there was Matt, I think his name was. So it just wasn't a thing. So empowering and amazing, I think, when you see now that young kids can come out and be comfortable about it and their straight mates are cool.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's really made a difference. But, yeah, I didn't really come out until I was 21, 22. And because I had a great relationship with my parents, I was silly, probably silly now. I was a bit worried that that would not be the same. I remember very clearly, I'd started at the Herald Sun and I moved in with these two housemates who were, one, they were a bit 10 years older, like a shared house in Richmond. Mm. And I actually couldn't say it. My mum finally got the courage,
guts.
The guts to say, look, are they gay? And then she goes, I said, yes. And then that was it. And then the next 24 hours, a student said, this is just ridiculous. I've got to get this off my chest. And I told my mum and there were tears. And then my dad got on the phone. I think this is probably an indication of the time. And my dad said, oh, your mum's worried you're going to get HIV or you're not going to have children. It was that initial reaction because they didn't really know any gay people.
Like, exactly.
Growing up in Hillsville, it just wasn't visible. It probably was, but they didn't realise. And, you know, so I completely understood. And then, you know, there were tears. And then a week later, not even a few days, my mum, to her credit, she'd gone down to the bank, I think it was, and she's told everyone, you know, the doctors. And they're like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. And then my aunties, who were very, very supportive, I think they knew a long time ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, we all knew. And then from then on, it was completely fine. So I've been really, really lucky. But for that initial week, it was really difficult. And when you've got a good relationship with your parents, and I was just really worried they would abandon me or something, when it was never going to be the case.
Well, I guess at the same time as well, that was the common story. Like on the cusp of coming out, you know, obviously the internet was only just becoming a thing. And so I'd read about these stories. Quite often are the stories that get published, the negative stories.
Yes.
So I kept accessing information that made me think that, yeah, my parents could disown me.
Yes.
And then I was racking my brain over anything that my mum and my dad had ever said to me. And I remember there was a few sound bites that had stayed with me throughout my adolescence.
Mm.
And I thought, maybe they might have a problem.
Yes, yeah.
But then they became the people that created the bubble to make me feel safe and comfortable and confident about my sexuality.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't
it's
it?
Weird.
I had a very similar experience, and it's probably our generation because it wasn't as visible, was it? Sexuality out and about there. But yeah, to my mum's credit, and actually, I had an auntie, and I have no qualms speaking about it because my mum would want me to speak about it.
Yeah,
they sent my mum and dad a letter from their church group, the local church group, all praying for me. Which, oh my God, and praying for Luke. And that actually set them off. And I was really, really happy about that. They said, don't you dare do that. That's our son. So, you know, they were never really exposed to gay life.
This is only 20
years ago. 99, 2000.
And that's exactly how it was back in those days.
Yes.
So when we look at these kids going off to school,
yes,
it's almost like in my mind, I feel really jealous because I could almost go back, wonder what it would be like.
Yes.
You know, to be at this age now and to not have had so many of those burdens that was placed on us in society.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, things have changed so much in the last 20 years, haven't they? And even with back then for us, I think, getting employment and thinking how people would react to you in the workplace, things like that was a real thing. And that was – I was very lucky to sort of meet, you know, go to like midsummer in the 90s and you'd meet like the older gay guys who were like in their 60s or 50s and get a bit of it. And even the clubs of Red Roar and all that in the late 90s. And I always loved meeting the older guys and they'd literally sit me down and give me a bit of history and all that. And it was really, really tough, really, really tough for them. I think we had it, I didn't have it that bad, but it's so fantastic to see how it's come a long way now. And I hope anyone who's listening in and, you know, everyone has their own journey, don't they? But I'm so glad it seems to be much more accepted for young kids to come out earlier.
What was the relationship like between you with you and your siblings?
Yeah, really good. We, me and my brother are very, very different. He's a real country boy. So, and my sister's actually the vice principal now of Hillsville High School. They were both very, very supportive always. So
wow.
It's not, you know, I'm not particularly the relationship we have is we don't see each other all the time. You know, we don't talk to each other all the time, but there's never been an issue there. And especially my sister, you know, she's very, very supportive, and I've been lucky like that.
I think it's amazing because you look at that, you're like, oh, my brother is so different to me.
Yeah.
But then it's just so beautiful to hear straight after that that he was protective.
Yeah, and he would, you know, they would never, there's never been an issue there where there haven't been only but supportive. And you, if you met my brother, you'd be surprised we're actually brothers.
We're really?
Very, very different.
Yeah, right.
But my sister probably takes over for me a bit. She's got a bit of a social justice warrior in her, you know, and... But, you know, my dad's very, very different as well. And I think talking about the big story with the gay and lesbian community in Australia of marriage equality, I find it with my partner's family as well. They're very, very country people.
Mm.
But those were the ones I thought in Australia, which was great, that really supported marriage equality.
Wasn't it amazing?
Good country people, yeah. You know, when religion really wasn't, it's not a big part of their life, but they just saw it for what it is. And I'd say my dad and my partner's family are very, very much like that. They're the people you'd go, oh, they might not be open to this, but I think that happened in Australia a lot. Those kind of people did support it.
It's interesting, and we'll get into that a little bit later on, because I think it's such an integral part of the last couple of years. But going back to sort of when you were growing up, what sort of hobbies did you have?
Well, I loved my tennis.
The last time I saw you,
yes,
was that you were introducing...
Billie Jean King.
Yes.
Oh, did you there? Right. How did I go?
Because I have been doing, you know, media interviews and everything, yeah, for the last now 6 years, you do sort of sit back and think you're judging other people and how, yeah, they're doing it. But I've always been in your audience, Luke.
Oh, like, thank you.
I've always been watching, and I can honestly say to you, which sounds like a suck, and I'm sure people listening in to me are like, shut up, Ben. But, you know, over the last 16 years of doing this job, you know, there's an enormous amount of me being in your audience.
Oh, thank
and
you.
Watching how you've done things and cultivating a career, but also doing it with taste and also making it appropriate and entertaining for everyone, no matter age, sex,
yeah,
or religion. I think that you do it in such a great way.
That's such a lovely compliment. Thank
and
you.
And I drank too much champagne and had a photo with Billie Jean and accidentally called her Margaret Court. So let me just tell you, that wasn't a good moment.
And what did she say? Did she laugh?
I'll tell
you my Billie King's for the listeners. I was working at the tennis and they had an amazing party and she just arrived. She literally hadn't been there in Australia long and she was so old school. And I went backstage beforehand underneath Rod Laver Arena and she sat there and she said, what are you going to ask? You know, very, very involved. And, you know, when it's someone of that level, and you would know when you interview like an idol, it can be difficult. Like sometimes you come away going, oh, I'm actually disappointed. But I didn't find that with her at all. And she was very, very honest about things, wasn't she? And
she really was.
She was.
But see, that's the thing, yeah, is I think she still has a connection to the way that I would be if I was her. Like,
yeah,
how would I handle it? How would she handle it? She still knows there's a level of entertainment in being inspiring and telling the truth.
Yes.
Like, you have to be a little bit ballsy. And she could have basically not said anything about Margaret Court, but she decided to have a few one-liners in there.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't she?
Yes.
And weren't they eaten up so well?
Yes.
You know, that's a level of entertainment.
I loved it. And as a journalist, that's who I've loved to have interviewed over the years, people who aren't so media trained and have a story to tell.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, growing up, what impact do you reckon your sexuality had on your transition from being a child to an adult? Do you think, yeah, that once you worked out your sexuality, do you think that changed who you were or threw you off course at all?
I can remember it clearly, and I actually was with a friend from high school and her niece who is coming out as a lesbian and said, you know, let's come and have a chat to her. And for me, I moved from Melbourne to the city and I got a part-time job, and at university I got exposed to gays, I guess. And
for lack of a better word.
And, you know, it was like suddenly a light just clicked. And I think I was very strong, and as I said in high school, when the boys used to say, I won't say the F word, and I was just, so what if I was? And that's the kind of attitude I had. And I looked at it as when I was about, well, I would have been late 18, I think, when I sort of started going to the nightclubs back then in Melbourne, all that. Probably ran into you on the dance floor.
Probably.
And I found it very, very liberating. Like, so for me, it just was like, this is the right thing. And I never felt negative about it. Look, the only thing, I wish I'd probably came out a bit earlier to my parents, but the late 90s in Melbourne was such an exciting, vibrant time.
You look at the fact that the scene and the clubs aren't the same anymore.
It was amazing.
And
yeah,
you think that's been stolen from the next generation.
That's right.
From having that.
We didn't have internet. It was just, for me, I'd go to a place called Q&A on a Thursday night in the Builder's Arms. I'd go there on a Thursday, and I really explored that whole scene, and I loved it. And I thought, this is it, and let's embrace this. I met some amazing role models, like older guys as well, friends, and you know, I never really had a boyfriend, but until a lot later. But I just thought, this is it. This is great, and never looked back.
How old were you when you had your first relationship?
It wasn't until I was really, truly proper relationship until I was 30.
Really?
I dated a lot. Don't get me wrong.
Is that because you were like waiting to find the absolute right person, or were you just enjoying the process of dating half of Melbourne?
Yeah, probably. I wouldn't call it dating even. I think I never had that desire to be in a relationship unless it was really working. And probably my first relationship, and the guy Brendan will tell you, you know, it was a bit rocky. It wasn't. And I probably, looking back, I probably didn't know how to behave because I was just enjoying being single forever, I guess. And it was never a thing like I wanted, like I didn't crave it.
Mm.
And so that only lasted for less than a year. And then I found my current partner online actually when I was 33, and I'm now 39, so I was very, very single in my 20s, and now
you're like, now Dan, we're gonna get onto him in a little bit. Let me tell you, he's not getting away from this.
No worries.
If you could go back and you could give Luke some advice, like if you go back to 12-year-old Luke, what advice would you give?
That's a very, very good question. I would just say explore everything, don't be shy, don't hold back, be nice to people, you know, don't get caught up in cliquey groups or something like that. I don't know. Just to be honest, everything's been okay.
You've been able to...
I've been all good.
So you've been scathing through.
Yeah. So
I have to ask you, so going into the career that you've been having, what is the magic for unearthing stories?
I've always been a much better reporter than a writer. So I'm probably a better communicator. So it's a good question. I think you always have to be very well researched and well read. That for me, I think that's been a real advantage for me in my career. I always read a newspaper since I was about 12. Like, so you automatically compute information into your brain without you even realizing it. So, and so that helps in a career like at the Herald Sun because it's so diverse and, you know, you cover so many topics. You're across all these things without you even realizing.
Yeah.
But I've always had the viewpoint for me, and I to try and be nice. Then that's about communicating, I think.
What was your first taste for journalism?
Well, I was really lucky. I knew really early that I wanted to be a journalist. And I think a lot of people struggle with what they want to do and they don't know. But I was one of those lucky ones. So we used to get the Sun and the Herald delivered. This was in the 80s. And then it became the Sun, the Herald Sun, and TV Week as well. We had subscription to that and Smash Hits magazine. I don't know if you remember that.
And TV Hits.
TV Hits, yeah. And so I devoured that really, really young, like 10 years old. So, and I'd run to get the paper in the morning when it got delivered. And so I knew very early, I reckon about 12, that I wanted to be part of the media and I wanted to work for that kind of paper. Like I was never very, even at university, I went to RMIT, I was never very, very fancy. I used to read New Weekly and Who Weekly. Like, that's what I wanted to do. But I think it was that love of news and that curiosity that I had for news. I'd watch the news, the TV news, Mr. Peter Hitchener, who I know you've spoken to. And I loved it from a very, very young age. And I knew I wanted to be in it from then. And then it just sort of, I think when you know that, like, it becomes easier for you.
I think that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think makes a good celeb reporter? Because I think, you know, looking back at it now, when you're like 39 and there's more people doing it.
Yeah, there is. Oh, my God, it's changed so much. And the media has really changed, hasn't it? Social media has changed it. When I started the Herald Sun, I started as a copy boy, basically, in late 97, so a long time. Newspapers were like selling 800,000 copies a day. Like, it was extraordinary. We didn't really have online news at all. So, and the competition for us at that stage was your New Ideas, your Women's Weekly. And the thing about newspapers, we never paid for stories. And then something like the internet started to really grow. A website like Perez Hilton really changed the game. But to make a good celebrity report, I think in Australia and in Melbourne in particular, it's such a small community. So you have to manage everything. You can't burn people too hard. Like, you've got to be very, very careful. But at the same time, you have to get a story. So a lot of serious journalists think it's fluffy and light, but there are a lot of layers behind the scenes that go on that make a good celebrity story. And we didn't pay for stories as well. And the appetite is just huge for it at the moment.
Totally.
And reality TV actually changed the game too.
I mean, yeah. Insta-famous people, I think it's really changing the game. And it probably has since 2001 when shows like Idol and Big Brother and things like that started to come out. We started to see everyday people becoming somehow as recognisable as the homegrown stars that we would know
that's
and
right.
love.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, oh, it's strange because there's just as much interest at the moment for someone who you valued up against someone who had really only had 3 months' worth of experience. And so it kind of is a hard thing to digest.
It is. Yeah. You know? And actually, reality TV really, I reckon, made my career, I have to say. Like, 2001, you're right. Survivor, I think, was one of the first. Was it like 2000 or?
I think the very first reality TV for Australia that took off was Temptation Island.
Temptation Island, yes.
And then I think it was Survivor.
Yeah.
And then it was Big Brother, then Idol.
Yes, yeah.
And so it sort of was like bang, bang, bang.
And I remember reporting on entertainment. You know, we were kind of like Entertainment News was part of the paper, but it was just sort of there, you know, a column or something on page 15. Big Brother changed that in Australia. We were writing about Sarah Marine. It was front page news.
Yeah, right.
It was like the whole nation was behind this show. Same thing for Australian Idols. Some of my favourite ever stories were those early years when Guy Sebastian won and Shannon Noel, they toured around the country. There were thousands of people everywhere you looked. And when he walked up the opera, I think it was like 4 million people watched it. And that changed the game for entertainment journalism, and I don't think we've ever looked back since. It became, this appetite for it is so huge. And it's not only newspapers, it's television, it's Twitter, it's Instagram, it's blogs, it's everything. But and then it never looked back with reality TV. I mean, you look at Kim Kardashian, like she's just probably the most famous woman in the world, and she came from reality TV.
Absolutely.
And Benjamin Norris.
Yeah. Well, I think it's changed the game from when I ended up doing it. I mean, I was on the 9th season of Big Brother.
Were you on Channel 9's version, weren't you?
That was the very first Channel 9 version. So it rated really well, but I think it rated really well for a nostalgic point of view because then it came back the year after and the ratings were half of what it was.
Yes.
And then it came back the year after that and surprisingly, it was a quarter of what it was.
Yeah.
And so I think that these days, the reality TV shows that work aren't the Big Brothers of the world. I think they have to keep evolving them.
They do.
You know, you look at The Bachelor turning into The Bachelor Paradise, you know, that's just like this ongoing change that they have to keep reshaping the mold to try and keep the audience interested.
It's fascinating because I remember 2001 Big Brother was just very, very simple. There was no stunts or anything. They literally just put them in a house. I remember Sarah Marie cooking her fish fingers drunk.
Yeah.
So things have changed.
So you sort of touched on this as well. You were saying the study that you did was at RMIT.
Yeah.
So what course did you go and do?
I did journalism. So back in the day, that was the one to do. And I was very lucky to get in. I didn't get a huge TER back then, it was called. I think I got on my interview and my general knowledge, and I loved it.
So were you already doing like a apprenticeship?
Or
anything working at the Herald Sun while you're doing the course?
No. I got a job probably, 8 months later as an editorial assistant, copy boy, basically photocopying, getting the faxes, sorting the faxes. That's how I started when I was at university. So I was a scoreboard operator too, which is weird, at the Australian Open in 95 and 96. And I always had a lot of experience at local papers, work experience, and I really, really pushed hard. And I think if I hadn't have got into that, I don't think I would have done what I've done.
I have these questions, so please don't shorten them for me because I'm really excited about them and people listening are going to be excited as well. Okay, here we go. Who was your favourite Australian celebrity that you interviewed when you were working for the Herald Sun?
Well, I've got a real connection with Delta because I think we grew up in the industry together. And I met her. I went out to the Neighbours set. She hadn't even released her first single. God, that would have been late 2002, I think. Yeah, late 2002. And we got along and then it just exploded with her career. She released Born to Try, actually late 2002, Born to Try. Then the next year, her album Innocent Eyes was number one for, I think, 52 weeks in a row.
Unbelievable.
And then somehow, I think, and you would probably have it too, you can tell, I think we're in the media, we can sense who is a star. Like we have that sort of...
Straight away.
Yeah, you can go, well, they're going to make it. Like, and I felt that with her straight away. This girl's special. And it was like on the bridge at Lasseter's at Neighbours. I can remember it clearly. That was the first interview she did for a major newspaper. And then as it went on, I was really, really supportive. And then, of course, when she got sick, she was the only reporter that she spoke to in the country when she got sick that day. And back then, that was like 7 pages, like front page news around. And ever since, we've had a really, really good relationship. I spoke to her the other day for Olivia Newton-John. So out of all the celebrity I've interviewed the most and has been the most supportive, it's probably her.
Who's your favourite international celebrity that you got to interview?
I love the old school ones. Like, I remember sitting with Jerry Hall at, like, the theatre, like, down the road.
Yeah, right.
Liza Minnelli's another one. Not that I had a one-on-one with her. It was at the races, which was just hysterical. So when they're this level of
a star,
you go, wow. So, and I appreciate that. But international, like, probably my most nervous, she's Australian, but I'd call her international, is Kylie. I was one of those ones that go to Brash's and buy my Kylie records and hide them because the boys would hate it.
Totally.
As a boy growing up, you weren't supposed to like Kylie.
No.
Like, you weren't.
You could sort of get away. I think at that age, I remember you could kind of get away with saying you liked Madonna more at that stage.
Yes.
Because it was more commercial or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, when Kylie came out, it was like... It was a sensation.
It was a sensation, yeah. Anyway, so Kylie, I know she's Australian, but international, like, I did her when she was on The Voice. I just had a one-on-one, and I just had to, that's the one where I'm like, the most, like, wow.
So, and she's also one of those humble people as well.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Who would you say is the worst that you've ever interviewed?
By far, Avril Lavigne, unfortunately, I have to say that. And she Avril Lavigne of all people.
What was she, 12?
She would have been 16 or 17. I really feel for her. This would have been about 15 years ago. I'm sure she's very different now. And remember, she was a huge star at the time. What would have been?
She was, yeah.
What was her big song? Skater Boy. Skater Girl?
I don't know.
Skater Something.
We're going to fail on a pop quiz right now.
Yeah, we are. Skater Something. And she was only 17, and I had a feeling her mum's or someone was pushing her when she didn't want to be in Australia. And we went to the Como Hotel in South Yarra to do the interview, and I got in there and she was on the piano. She was just going bang, 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 wouldn't look at me, and it was just very, very awkward. I wrapped it up, I reckon, within 1 or 2 minutes.
What was the kind of story that came out from that then?
Well, I wasn't really mean because I felt sorry for her. So I just don't think I didn't even do a story. But she was at the time one of the biggest stars in the world. So it was very awkward, and it's like, oh, what do we do now?
It's a strange thing when they're brought here to this country, when they do those media junkets, they've usually gotten so bored. Who's the laziest person that you think?
Well, I was really disappointed with Amy Schumer a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember.
Amy Schumer?
Yeah. She came out for Trainwreck.
And she was a train wreck.
Well, and it's well documented. I think it was one radio station, I can't remember who, really upset her. And that's what often happens at these junkets, and they're off track. But she just didn't want to be here. And, you know, she was at this was about 3 years ago, and she was probably the world's biggest star at that stage and, like, had that real cred about her, and that was really disappointing.
Who usually has the worst behaviour at social events?
It's unfortunately people are so, and I think social media is great, and I love it, and I'm on it too much. But it's kind of killed any spontaneity now with these parties. Like, they're a bit boring now. Like, everyone's so well behaved. You know, gone were the days. I remember leaving the Logies with John Stevens and Curtis Stone, I think Shannon Knoll. This was like 7 a.m. at Heat Nightclub, like, you know, 15 years ago. You would never see that anymore.
The publicists are chasing them.
That's right. It's so managed. And, you know, Instagram, thank God back then, like when we were going out in the clubs in the late 90s, we didn't have Instagram or people weren't filming us or anything, you know, because we were probably very misbehaved. So I think people are a bit boring at the moment. So
is that because people like Michelle Stampler are doing so well at their job?
Yes.
They're reining them in.
Yeah. And look, the whole social influences, and I've been very vocal about this. I'm not sure how I feel, but maybe this is because I'm middle-aged now. Like, it's not about the guest list anymore, like, you know, high-caliber celebrities or whatever. They want people with followers, you know, and so they plan everything from, you know, a lovely cocktail that's Instagrammable. And that's really changed. I don't think it's very social anymore, like, but maybe just because I'm a bit jaded.
Mm.
But I still think people have they want that celebrities, you know, more so than the social influencers, but that's a whole other topic.
Is there an issue of talent versus tenacity these days? I think that the most talented people I come across these days don't have the tenacity to push themselves out there.
Yeah.
And the people who have the tenacity usually have less talent.
I agree.
Do you see that happening?
I do agree. It's really, and it's really, really tough, the media at the moment. Like, a person in my position, if you ask about advice, actually, I mean, I've had a great career, but if I was 12 right now And going back to your question about if I had to say my advice, be very, very diverse as you can, because the media is really, really tough. And you make that point. There are so many people out there that should probably be more prolific and don't make it. But then there are some that do that you kind of question.
Yeah.
It's just really tough.
I remember a publicist said to me, was like, oh, Ben, I was going to do Celebrity Apprentice. Mm. She was like, oh, they're now thinking about getting someone else and not using you. So she told me like a stunt to do. And right. She said, if you do this stunt, your career will take off. And then I didn't do that stunt because I couldn't think of anything worse than staging something.
Yes.
And then now I think back to it and I'm like, you know what? There's probably people out there with that tenacity that make those stunts or do yes. those, or cultivate those stunts that are probably still getting the work.
Yeah, I think that you've always got to be true to yourself, I think. And that's
good advice.
One advice that I would give, that's what I've always been in the media, and you kind of, sometimes it's been a letdown for me. You know, I probably could have broken a lot more stories if I was, I don't know if tenacious is the right word, but, you know, compromise your morals. Or, you know, I can't think of a time when I've done that, but I think you've got to be very true to yourself.
What do you do to fact check a rumour?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I did hear one yesterday where the new block would be. I can't say because I want to break the story. So I was thinking about that today. How do I actually chase it up?
Have you ever gone on a whim and thought, I don't know the facts, I'm going to publish it?
No. And that's, people sort of slam sometimes News Corp and News Limited. But for me, that's, I can't think of a time where I would have done that. Like, you've got to check. So you've just got to basically go to the person or go to the publicist and make sure it's 100%. Media has changed. Look at Rebel Wilson last year with that whole court case. And
I reckon everyone would be scared after that Rebel Wilson.
Well, yes. Oh, my God. But rightly so. I think the magazines have really gone downhill like that. And when we grew up, they weren't like that. But I think what's happened is, because of Twitter, because of social media, that's where that entertainment landscape has really changed, because they've got to write about something. Everything's broken like that, you know. Celebrities break their own news on their own social media platforms. So,
or they sell those stories.
They sell their stories,
which they weren't selling them before.
No, they weren't. No, it wasn't about that. But, yeah, a good rumour, you know, you've just got to do your fact-checking.
Have you ever been hit for defamation?
No. Well, I had one threat in my whole career, probably because I'm very careful with things like that, and probably too careful, because I think a good entertainment journalist can push the boundaries a bit.
Well, no names. Who was it?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
Tell you. It was Redfu. I got a legal letter from Redfu. Remember, you know, the X Factor judge?
Yeah.
And it was about I did an opinion piece. He had this terrible song, which I thought was really misogynist. I can't remember what it was called. It was like glorifying women, and it was terrible. And I basically hinted that he was a misogynist or something. Actually, like, my heart, like, it's not a nice feeling.
No.
But it didn't go anywhere. It was just a little threat. You know, I've had a lot of friends that have had that, but I'm just probably too soft.
Do you lose a job over that?
No, generally, the way it works at News Corp, at any major media outlet, is they have lawyers. Like, things don't get through without really, what's the word, thorough legal process.
Mm.
And so they'll generally back you. So that's part of that happens, and it happens a lot. You know, Jeffrey Rush is suing the Daily Telegraph at the moment.
Mm.
So, you know, I've never, Touchwood, had that kind of lawsuit against me. It'd be very, very hard to sort of get through that.
What's the TV guilty pleasure at your place at the moment? You have to be honest with me.
Oh, I'm not guilty about it. I love my Housewives. I love my Melbourne Housewives. And I'm
still watching it after all these years.
Yeah, I love it. You know, because it's funny, and because that's one show that I've written a lot about in Melbourne, and it's because you get to know the girls as well. So it's funny watching people you get to know. Yeah.
What do you think about the rumours that Gina Liano and Lydia are not coming back to the show?
I wouldn't be surprised, but to be honest, I think where that's at the moment, they haven't decided if they're going to do another series. There's a bit of an exclusive for you. I know the Sydney one has been put on hold, but I think Foxtel are really concentrating on their dramas at the moment. But Housewives was great content for me, because they were just, all of them were so, like, you know,
hungry for it.
Hungry for
they
it.
They were thirsty.
They loved it. Yeah, a new breed of reality stars. I love it. Bring it on.
Love it or hate it.
Yes.
These bloated women are doing so well.
They're doing amazing, aren't they? So embrace reality TV. I love it.
There was a real sense of friendship, I think, over the last 16 years of looking at you working at Confidential and seeing some of the companionships that you had. Who was it that you thought was amazing to work with now when you look back?
I never had one hint of homophobia at the Herald Sun. It was always the opposite. And people think sometimes, oh, it's a right-wing paper or whatever. But I used to sit near the roughest police reporters, and they loved me, you know, for who I was.
Yeah.
And, you know, played up on it. And that 100%, you know, it was such a brilliant place to work with like that. So I really respect Peter Blunden, who's the editor-in-chief, Damon Johnson, the editor, Nick Papp's the Sunday editor, people like Cameron Adams, who I really loved, the music reporter, Nui Tokoa, Jackie Epstein, of course, my colleague. Jackie's a great friend, and, you know, it was a very unique place. I think it was time for me to go last year. Like, I'd done everything I could.
What was the reason for your redundancy? Requesting a redundancy?
Voluntary, yeah. It was voluntary redundancy. I just thought, I just want to do something different, and it was kind of like I'd done everything I could. I'd reached where I could, and, you know, you don't want to get to a point where in 10 years' time where you go, what could have been, I think. And, you know, it was I could have stayed there, like, no doubt about it.
For lack of a better saying, yeah. You couldn't top it.
It's a family time slot. It was a really, and they would say the same, we ended in great terms with everyone. They were so supportive of what I wanted, and I think it worked for them as well. And it was a really emotional kind of couple of months, for sure.
If you're looking back at that and looking back over your career, you know, is there anything that you go, oh, I wish I would have done that differently?
There were times I think I had my own column at the Sunday Herald Sun. I loved it, but I think I could have respected the privilege of having that a bit more. Does that make sense?
Like, in what way, though? Because were you wanting the content to be better? Or?
I probably could have taken it a bit more seriously. Like, that was a real privilege to have a column like that. But I just thought, oh, it's a column. But I think when you're in your late 20s and, you know, your early 30s,
you think your shit doesn't stand.
That's right. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I probably could have just, looking back, appreciated that a bit more and realised, you know, that was amazing. Yeah.
I think that in lots of ways, and even sitting here with you now and having been in your audience for so long, I think it comes across to me today that you've humbled a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe you're looking back at it now,
yeah,
and sharpening the way that you do your work,
yeah,
and then you're looking back on it and being really grateful.
Yeah, I'm really grateful, and, you know, it's been a real privilege, and I'm not dead yet, though, so.
There's definitely people in the LGBTI audience that are out there listening to this and have probably been inspired by your story.
Oh.
You know, being gay and working in this industry, yeah, were you ever treated differently, would you say?
I actually think as an entertainment journalist, it actually helps. Celebrities in television, and this is both men and women, straight, whatever, I think relate. And as an entertainment and gossip journalist, like, we're actually in where the majority, I would say. And it's very rare in the media.
If you think about it, though, and I think this is because I've been asked this question before, I think gay men in particular are quite emotional, more emotional than they let on. And I think having some of that emotional ability to relate to other people, to have a nice level of empathy, but general and honest intrigue into it, creates a nice little cocktail for getting someone to tell you the most appalling secrets.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And it's funny, I think, especially in entertainment and the arts, if you're a homophobic singer or an actor or an artist, I think you would agree, like, you're going to go nowhere. Like, you have to accept the gays. They're everywhere in, you know, television, makeup.
Absolutely.
Entertainment journalists, like people like Jonathan Moran, Cameron Adams, Andrew Hornery in Sydney.
The list is so extensive.
Andrew Bucklow. All those entertainment reporters and editors and everything, a lot of them are gay men. So not many lesbians, but gay men. It's so accepted. And in entertainment, that sort of, I've found that anyway.
Did you ever feel like pressure to come out and be out your followers?
No,
your
and I didn't want to go on the route. I've always just been myself. Like, I don't want to ham it up at all. Not that people do ham it up, but that's just not for me. Probably why I've never done a breakfast radio and I've never lasted that well as the entertainment show business reporter, because I wasn't prepared to just ham it up. You know how sometimes they can?
Talking to Adam Richard, it was funny. Yeah. He went in for an interview and he said at the time there was like about 15 entertainment reporters and he just turned it up to 100.
Yeah.
And then
that worked for him.
Yeah. And it really did work for him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, talking to him about his personality, his career and what was appropriate for him, he could turn it up to that level and it still fitted into a believable and relatable, I guess, way of doing it.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, come on. Like, this is a gay person on radio being extremely gay.
Yes,
the fabulous Adam Richards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, 15 years ago.
Yes, that's right.
Like, it's unbelievable that, you know, he got away with that to the point that Fox FM at that stage was massive.
But I think it comes down to you've got to be yourself. It doesn't matter if you're gay or straight. And I miss Adam. I wish he was back on radio. I think he was really he was unique. You're right. He was really genuine about it. I think sometimes it can be put on a bit too much.
So you've got a huge love of sport, which I love, and I know that you love tennis.
Yep.
And, you know, other sports as well. What's your thoughts on sexuality in sport at the moment? Do you think we will see more sports and entertainment people coming out?
I hope so. And things are changing. I remember, you know, Anthony Kalea, for example, we all knew about that. And now he would probably look back and go, gosh, I should have probably come out a bit earlier. I don't know. You know, it's everyone's journey is their own. And it would be really lovely to see an AFL player come out. But I think it's really up to them and no one else can pressure them. You know, I don't think we can sit here and say they should.
Do we have a right to own that piece of information?
That's right.
You know, as the public.
I think, and I follow a bit in America, there's some young American footballers that have come out. There's basketballers that have, you know, swimming. I mean, who would have thought with Ian Thorpe and, you know, it's like, who cares? It's part of who he is now. So I think definitely 100%. I was really inspired by the AFL, the NRL, and all those high-profile players that actually came out and supported marriage equality. They were quite vocal about it, especially some of the Melbourne, the St Kilda boys, I think, and Western Bulldogs are really, really strong about it. So I think if there was an AFL player, I think that it would be embraced. And I don't get this, you know, they're going to lose sponsors. I don't think they would now. I actually think that it would actually be beneficial for them.
Mm.
We've come a long way now. I don't think it would harm them.
It would be really interesting to just ask that one question to Ian Thorpe about it, because I remember I had a chance to interview him before he came out. I think it was probably about 8 years before he came out. And afterwards, there was a publicist that was there, not his, but said, you know, Thorpe will, of course we know.
Yeah.
And they said, but he will never come out because of his Japanese sponsorships,
right.
You know. And it'd be interesting to think about it now. You know, was that his management or whoever was getting a slice of that advising him not to come out, or was he genuinely worried about international licensing and sponsorship?
Well, yeah, he's a real fascinating one, and maybe it's that era as well, because he's not much younger than us, I think. What sort of got me with him, and I'd be interested to see what he says, that's his journey as well, and we can't really criticise it, that I felt for him because he did actually deny it, you know. For so long.
But I guess that's what made it, that's what built the wall higher and higher for him.
And imagine having that in your head, like the difficulty when everyone really has embraced him and they love him and he's doing so well now, which is so great to see. I love the fact he's probably one of our greatest ever sports people, and he was very vocal in the marriage equality campaign, and everyone loves him, and they probably would have at the time, but then things have changed, as you said.
Someone once said to me, if you pack enough stuff in the closet, you're probably never going to come out.
Yeah, exactly.
You probably packed too many things in the closet before I could even get to that.
But I must say, and talking as a journalist, like everyone says, oh, they're gay footballers and stuff. I actually haven't heard that many very, very strong rumours, and I don't know if there is. Like everyone says, oh, there must be a few in each team, but the hairdressers make up for it, you know what I mean? So it's like...
Why do we need the footy stars?
Yeah, no, like, you know, that sort of whole, oh, 1 in 10, or I've never believed that. It just depends where it is. And I can honestly say, like, in 20 years, and we hear a lot of things behind the scenes that I haven't had one strong... You probably have more than me. So one who I know who a gay AFL player is. There's been a few whispers, but not that many.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And, like, we'll just have to wait and see.
That's right. It's up to them. Yeah.
It might be a while before these sports stars want to take anything away from the actual sport itself.
Yeah.
You know, why should they then take away their training to then probably be the face of something that they might not necessarily
feel comfortable with? And they might not be wanting to be in the media or something, you know.
And whoever it is that comes out next,
it's going to be
gangbusters.
That's right. It'll be, and then people will say, oh, this isn't front page news. Well, it actually is.
It's huge.
Yeah.
How long have you been with your partner for now?
6 years. Nearly 6 years. Wow.
And so marriage equality happened last year, and it would be remiss of me not to ask you this question. Are you engaged?
No, we're not engaged. And
like,
yeah. It's funny. And I'll tell the story. Like, my partner, Jason, is very much, we're very, very for marriage equality. And I'm probably more open to it, if I have to be completely honest. It's not for him, though, and that's not that he's not supporting marriage equality, but I think, you know, he's 42, and I think it's our generation growing up as a gay man. We never had it. We never had the it's part of our existence, so we haven't thought about it. Like, I mean, you led the way. Like, not many people were getting engaged when you did, but for us, it was never a thing that we could do. So we just, I think, subconsciously, and I think a lot of people of my age, I'm nearly 40, have that same viewpoint. So it's not something that, you know, we feel, not the need to, but it's just because we haven't had the choice. And it's just so wonderful we do have the choice. So I would hope, you know, in growing generations, that's going to change for people. But, you know, I just want to have it for a big party and celebrate my family and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's not a deal breaker for me.
No.
Yeah, but I do think a lot of
What you're saying is that you're waiting to be proposed to. No. This is less about me putting pressure on you.
Yeah, no. But deep down, I feel probably the same as him. I'd love to have a party and all that. But I don't feel I need to get married. But, of course, 100% we have the right now. And, you know, I was thinking about it before. Like, the world hasn't come crumbling down, hasn't it? But I think a lot of gay men, middle-aged gay men, are probably similar to me as well, I think.
I think that you're right in the majority.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, for a lot of people, once marriage equality was happening, it was less about wanting an actual marriage or the right to being married. I think it became a fight about equality.
Yes.
And I think that was where it needed to be. Like, I think that's why I got over the line, was that it was more people understanding that equal rights was important.
Yeah.
And it was less about asking for the fundamental changes to religion or the politics.
I agree. And it's amazing it's happened. It's such a brilliant thing. And I don't mind everyone asked. So
they're going to keep asking. But you know
they
what?
They will. I like that. I like that we can be asked now.
Here, I'm going to give you this, though. Yeah. I think this is the best response to people because people continue to ask it. It's very hard to actually find love and to find someone to be in love with. And if you think about it, you've been now with your partner for 6 years. I think it's why try and change something that's working so well.
Yeah.
If it's not necessarily the most important thing to you, I think it's just important to value each other and respect that.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not for everyone, but that's the same for straight relationships as well, isn't it? Like, not everyone gets married. Look, I haven't seen an avalanche of gay weddings, so...
Or maybe we're just not getting invited.
Not getting invited. We're past it.
Well, no, it's funny because I've been having a lot of my gay friends being like, oh, my God, I've just been invited to so many gay weddings. And I'm like,
where's mine?
I'm like, I don't think I've... I'm like, oh, of course. Yeah. But what I mean to say is I've completely, you know, it has sort of changed. Are there any cultures about being a gay man that you don't connect to?
Look, I've said this and I would struggle because I know what I'm like on social media. I feel for, and probably some young listeners here, I think Instagram... And that whole gays of Instagram thing is, I would have struggled with that growing up. Like
looking
at the body beautiful. I just think this is not reality. And if any young gay men are listening out there, like, it's not reality. Don't look at that as, you know, to look like a lot of these guys. Nothing against these guys that are like this. It's not reality. There might be not eating for days or steroids or anything, and that whole gym culture is a bit, it's become a bit too much. And I would struggle with that if I was single, I think, and especially being young and coming out, because we never had that. And it just feels like, you know, there's certain, the way they look and stuff, it's very, it's a certain look. I don't know. And
it's manufactured.
And I often think now, and maybe because I'm a bit older, I'm not really in the whole gay scene at all, but I think it was actually a bit more diverse when we were growing up than it is now.
I think from what people need to listen to in this is that both Luke and I enjoy our red wine and cheese too much.
Yes.
It's interesting for us in our generation growing up, we didn't have any gay role models on television or radio. It was really hard for us. And I think looking at it now, there are more. Like, we've got people that are very positive, like Ellen.
Yes.
There's also Andy Cohen.
Yeah.
I think there's some really strong role models. But here in Australia, I do think that we're really lacking having real gay role models in media.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, do you think that that's what's missing as well?
Yeah.
Because at the time, I kind of feel like anyone we've got in the media that has a social profile that's gay, you know, you're comedians.
I looked up to, well, didn't look up to, probably thought he was hot, Ian Roberts, you know, the gay rugby player.
Yes.
And he wrote a book, and that was sort of wow back then.
I haven't read that book.
Yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's really good. And, You know, he came out when we that was in the 90s, and, you know, but I thought it was the whole marriage equality for me, like the Magdas of the world was amazing. Mm. So I think there are a few, but of course we could have more.
What would you say is next for Australia? Is there anything in particular that we need to tackle amongst the LGBTI community? Like, do you think there needs to be more visibility for trans people?
I think we've got to start respecting each other a bit more, I think. It just seems, I don't know, if gay men, maybe, I don't know, a bit judgy, I think. You know
what
I mean?
We can be, can't we?
We get very, very judgy, yeah. And
I think it's because we felt like we were being judged so much when we were younger that we then perpetuate that.
It's very tribal, I think. Very tribal. And I think it'd be nicer if we were all just a bit nicer to each other and a bit more accepting and just... Yeah, I feel, I don't know, that's not saying that the LGBTQI community isn't, but I do think there is a bit of that, you know, it's very, very tribal. It'd be nice if we were all together a bit more.
Have you got a message for the queer community that are listening to this right now?
Listen to your show. No, just for me, the advice I give to young gay men is just enjoy that time when you're 18 or 19 and just coming out, and it's like very liberating, and it's such a special time to explore who you are, and the world's your oyster, that's what I would say.
I just want to say thank you so much for being able to come in here today and share your story. I think it's so important for people to be able to see that there has been people, gay people, people from the LGBTI community working, and they have been working in prominent roles, having successful careers like yours.
Oh, thank you.
And it's been a real privilege to sort of go through some of this stuff, go through the gossip, go through the light. Thank you so much for coming in here today.
Thank you.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the community radio network.
Sound check, bound step, big moves, bound to cause a proper lyric on the tune. Chill it if you're not with it, no pressure. Send vivid images among men and women with song. I'm sort of like Picasso with the mic. Word form hype, dispense energy like battery flat on your life. Kill it, we loving the vibe. Silly to diss it, this is my life. Fill the mind, defending it to the end of mine. Staying true to it, maneuver through the shit. I do the dude to kick the wickedest music into mix. Man, if you moving in this super duper Uber type attack, I left from tripping over drunk or sober. Loads of heads are getting to know it's undeniable. Ready, rock crowds with the fire, sounds dire, but I'm only up running off the liars. We hire them, man, are stuck in the oven, early retirement to be if the people ain't buzzing off what they speak. We
I'm sweet like this song you can't grow. There's no way to know, so we hold it down, we got the sound, we're on a show. I'm sweet like this song you can't grow. There's no way to know, so we hold it down, pick up a sound, put on a show. Day to night, I see fading lights. We still hope for the morning, sure to be bright. Stay positive, keep it in mind. My head high, setting off, steady, setting things right. From day to night, I see fading lights. We still hope for the morning, sure to be bright. I stay positive, keep it in mind. My head high, setting off, steady, setting things right.
Thoughts plus telepathy rearrange trajectory, so I can send them somewhere useful where something's achieved. Disbelieve, allergy to mystery. Clean your mind with antihistamines with Listerine. You can breathe fresh and easy. Breathing is believing, and that will maybe get you through the evening. Eventually you're leaving and bereaving. Breathing as you realise mortality's deceiving when seeking purpose. No, not what we're missing. Unraveling the present if we're always reminiscing. Jest only liquids down a size wine thinning. Forget about your thick hips, indulge in fine linens, align refined women, redefine swimming. Open up a public pool and tackle crime in them. Ever searching for a spark, a static electric. Never gonna mess with my aquatic detectives. A sound put on a show. I'm sweet like to this song you can't grow. There's no way to know, so we hold it down, pick up a sound put on a
my shoulder. Day to night, I see fading lights. We still hope for the morning, sure to be bright. I stay positive, keep it in mind. My head high, setting off, steady setting things right. From day to night, I see fading lights. We still hope for the morning, sure to be bright. I stay positive, keep it in mind. My head high, setting off, steady setting things right.
Calm. To SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
In a society inundated with technology,
one podcast will set out to document the weird, the wonderful and mind-boggling stories of the digital age. Think. Digital Futures.
Finding the human in the machine. Tune in 6:30 p.m. Tuesdays or 10:30 a.m. Sundays.
Brought to you by the University of Technology Sydney and 2SER 107.3.
Stories. Ideas. Music. 2SER 107.3.